This is a Doxcast, not an Argon Soxcast, or a Bendis and Loxcast. Now I'm hungry. This is a Doxcast. It's a nerdy Toxcast. Discuss a Moxcast with Rich Early and friends.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another returning episode of the Doxcast. I'm your co-host, Josh Trumbo, and with me, as always, is the reviewer guy, Rich Early. A little out of practice. Rich, how are you doing tonight?
I'm great. How are you?
We're way out of practice.
We haven't done one of these for a while.
You know, I had like half a month to come up with something, and I just didn't. That shows you the dedication.
There's a difference between half a month, though, at the end of December,
half
a month, like, at the end of July, right? Like, those are, it's the same number of days, hours, minutes, all of that, but it's just not, that's the theory of relativity thing is going on there.
Right, we got some kind of Jeremy Bear-me thing happening. Anybody? No?
No, not me.
Nobody
no.
watches
Sorry.
A Good Place?
Oh, I do, but
I'm
TV,
it's so good!
It is, and I'm behind.
Oh.
Unless that's from early on, and then I just don't remember it.
That was last season? Season 3, I think.
Behind.
Oh, man. You got to catch up.
All right, what are we doing here?
Well, first we're saying hi to Jeremy Hackley. He's on Facebook and says hello.
Hi, hey, Jeremy.
Welcome. Thanks for joining us. What we're doing tonight, Rich, is we've got a panel of experts here to talk about the year in review. It's 2019 is almost over. We have less than 2 days as of the recording of this podcast before it turns to 2020. And so what better time to sit down and talk about the things that happened in 2019? Because there isn't too much more that can happen. Now watch, something huge is going to happen tomorrow, and I'm going to regret saying that.
Yeah.
But maybe we should go ahead and introduce our panel of experts here.
I mean, McDonald's is closing, so.
Well, yeah, that's pretty big news.
All of them. They're all, oh, wait.
That's, I think you might be wrong on that. Right. In fact, I know you are.
So the two of us, one of us or both of us, you know, most of the time we're on a Doxcast.
Yeah.
But for year-end review, we've brought along another regular Darren Gregson.
Hello.
Another regular Brad Meixner.
That's me.
And John Layton and another regular.
How's it going, everybody?
Man, Brad, you sound a little... Never mind.
All of our questions are going to be directed to
Brad
now, aren't they?
So, Brad, I want you to take the floor right now. And yeah. So we're recording tonight in a block. We're going to record 3 episodes, and but then we'll put them out every Monday on audio on the website and everything. And so it's a weird day. I mean, it was a Monday. And I know you went to work for sure. Did you go to work? No, you drove in.
You made it to work.
Clearly you made it to work.
Yeah. Well, I was supposed to... Tomorrow was supposed to be my day off, and then I was going to work today. But that all went to heck because we had, like, the, you know, blizzard apocalypse here and everything. Yeah. So, and then tomorrow was New Year's Eve, so some of us are partying, I assume, and some of us are not. I don't know.
I party pretty hard. Watch out, everybody.
So, but that's the end of the year, like you said. So, Basically, we're just going to have kind of a free-form discussion about some of the best things that happened in gaming, in comic books. Gaming can include, you know, we'll talk a little D&D, touch on a little Magic, touch on comics, and, you know, whatever. I mean, I hope we can just sort of have a free-form discussion about what did we like in 2019, so...
Yeah, and this offer goes out to those of you in the chat. Feel free to pop in your suggestions there, talk amongst yourselves, and we'll see if we can include some of your picks as well as some of ours. So,
yeah, and in the event promotion, we'll mention this a couple times. What are our plans? Things I envisioned wanting to do for this podcast was coming up with something unique to sell during it, which I had some ideas, but it's still a new concept sort of tying content to sales and nothing materialized the way that I was wanting it to. I mean, it's that time thing, you know. We just didn't have it. But we will give me a chance to review a little bit. And, you know, anybody who comments, likes, and shares will go in drawings tonight for some giveaways. What I'd love to do during the night is have a code word for something. But I don't have that planned yet either.
Oh, is that like on Pee-wee's Playhouse? Mm-hmm. Whenever you say the secret word, we all have to scream real loud?
No, like there's a code word during the podcast. If you know what it is, you come in and you get something by saying
I see.
But that was my idea. But then But then I realized that, you know, you layer too many of those things on and employees hate you because they have no idea, like,
I'm supposed to remember
that, you know, strawberry shortcake means they get 10% off every issue number 3 that came out this year,
you know, something
like that. So.
Come into the store. Tell the cashier, strawberry shortcake. every issue 3. But you have to buy every issue 3 in the store.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's not and issue 3, it's all of them. So go and find them all.
Well, I think the thing that we have the most things to talk about is comics. But you know, Brad needs to clear his throat a little bit, and he'll be the one to contribute a lot to that. So I don't know, Darren, why don't you kick us off with a comic of choice?
A comic of choice for 2020 was
2019.
2019.
We're recording the 2020. Yeah. That would be awesome, actually. We should record the end of year 2020 show and see how close we came, right? And she, because like we can predict, we know what's coming. We know a lot of things coming out, right? So we can just be like, holy crap, Ikoria was an awesome set for Magic that came out in April of this year, you know? Anyway.
So 2019, thank you for correcting me, Rich.
And everyone.
No, you're right. I'm already, my head's already in that space. Once and Future from Boom Studios. In the first instance, it was a book. Now, Boom Studios have been running a returnability program for maybe a few years now, but this was something bigger than that. They were making all 6 issues of the series returnable, and the trade. There was other incentives as well for retailers. But not only that, the creative team, Kieran Gillen, Wicked and Divine, and Die, a very established writer, very respected writer, and Dan Mora, the artist, who I'd not heard of before, but I really like his work. So this was a strong creative team on a book that, you know, Image anywhere would have sold well, but they were at Boom Studios, which was fantastic. But that's even before we talk about the actual content of the book. It was just this whole... we went to Comics Pro in February 2019. And
Philip Sadlick. Yeah.
Sadlick. From Boom Studios talked about how, you know, we want to make changes. You know, he talks about, like, you know, we all want to make changes to the industry. You know, here's something we can do to change, because a lot of the time they talk about change, but nothing really happens. So they put their money where their mouth was.
Well, his number one point was that the top 5 publishers have been the same top 5 publishers for the last 8 years. Yes. They may have shuffled around a little bit, but you go to these meetings, you go to Comics Pro, and everybody says, I hate the way things are, but he said, you vote with your dollars. So, you're not, you know, you guys are saying you don't like the way things are, but you're not doing anything other than buy from the people you're not happy with, right? Yeah. And so, and Boom actually moved into the top 5. They became the 4th largest publisher this year, behind only Marvel, DC, and Image, at least in the month of
November.
Yep. Yes, so,
which is a big deal, really.
Oh, it's a huge deal. Yeah. I mean, it's sort of like these big 3, but then everybody else. But you're talking about companies that have been around for, you know, IDW, who has Transformers and all these things, and so on and so forth. You know, like that they set a goal and they have really reached it. You know, they're not going to. Right now, I don't see them catching Image. Image sits at probably about 10% of the market share. That's a pretty. Yeah. That's asking a lot. I think you'd have to really see purchasing coming out of Marvel and DC and over to Boom or something. Because, Image fans are not going to stop buying Image from, you know. So.
And I'd say there's a cross-section as well of Image fans. I am an Image fan, so I'm buying Boom books as well. I mean, that was a big deal, and it followed through, and we invested in that, didn't we?
We did. We ordered a lot of copies. We did a huge promotion. And we asked people to help try to, you know, change the future of comics. And, you know, like, honestly, our customers did help do that. I mean, it worked. We got proof of concept that if we offer the right book in the right way, you know, if we went to returnability on everything, it would just quickly become boring. You know, it would be, right? So, you know, we want to do more of that. We started to do it with both Legion of Superheroes number 1, because that had returnability for us. So DC actually, I mean, Boom made a change in the industry.
Yeah.
DC Comics listened and has offered a lot of returnability to their credit. Marvel Comics is like, well, we have Spider-Man, so screw you. You know, you're not going to get returnability because you get Spider-Man. So, I mean, you know, that's fair, right? Like, I mean, I can understand that. So, but yeah, talk content for a second.
Well, it's set in the modern day, but it's like an Indiana Jones style story with this elderly lady who actually turns out to be like almost the Indiana Jones character. But there's something strange going on, and it's all to do with Knights of the Round Table, Excalibur. I don't want to give away too much. It is a fantasy story, but her grandson, who is a key character, has no idea what anything that's going on, and he's kind of dragged into this almost this narrative of fantasy of like secret societies. And, you know, the supernatural elements in there as well. And it all revolves around returning the country, England, I believe, to its rightful owners.
Sorry to interrupt you, Darren. We have a comment here that's saying you need to speak up a little bit. It's
okay.
A little harder to hear. Maybe we do want to move you closer to the microphone, or vice versa, if we can twitch that over your direction, maybe.
Okay. Is that better?
Hopefully it is. There's a little bit of a delay, so.
What was Paul Gerald's in the thing? Says Rays all in. I'm trying to remember what we were discussing.
I'm guessing that it looks like we're at a poker style table.
Oh,
here.
Sure. Thanks, Paul. Yeah,
that's my guess.
Yeah. Well, and the plot of Once in Future, basically they're trying to these. I mean, it's issue five. I think you know there's some there's basically a bunch of fascist people who think that if they bring King Arthur back, that he will, because the twist is that King Arthur is, I want to use my terminology carefully, but, you know, for all intents, it's a racist, or like, you know, a Briton superiorist, right? Like, if you're not Anglo-Saxon, I'm going to defeat you. And so that's what people are bringing him back on the premise of. So it's sort of an interesting twist, basically.
Yes. So. And then throughout the story, you're learning the history of the characters, what's come before, how some of the characters' relationships have changed due to all these things, and I'm really enjoying it. Yeah, it's a book that, you know, Boom were right to do this with that book because it just added credibility even more to their guarantee. Their returnability, because it's just a great series. I think it's elevated them as a publisher, and we've seen other series follow that have been, there's been kind of a mixed quality, but from the whole, it's been a higher standard than I've seen from them.
Yeah, this book provided a good anchor.
Yeah, anchor.
And you know, and typically what you see is, I mean, Kieran Gillen's a huge name in comics. Yeah. He's written all kinds of stuff. Wiccan Divine is his most famous independent project, but he's written tons of Marvel books. And so, you know, typically if that person's got a really good book, it's going to be an Image. That just is sort of the way it is. So the fact that already that this book was at Boom was a big deal. And you're definitely right. They basically have a stable of creator-owned books now, and this was sort of a tent pole for making that happen.
Yeah, and there's more coming as well. So
So
that's a highlight.
Is Decorum? Who's that from?
That's Image Comics.
Oh, it's from Image. Yeah. Okay, all right.
Yes.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Shh. That'll be for our 2020 podcast. Yes. So. Yeah. All right. Well, that's a comic. John and Josh, do you want to talk some? How many board games you got versus D&D? What's our thinking here? Should we do a board game talk?
Yeah. Sure.
Okay.
Board games continue to be difficult to nail down, what with all the Kickstarters and such. You'll play something this year that actually came out 2 years ago, but it just finally hit retail, etc., etc. But I think one that we want to mention here, it's one that I unfortunately haven't had the chance to play yet, but I've heard so many good things, but it's Marvel Champions LCG from Fantasy Flight Games. Fantasy Flight Games has just apparently, you know, they've been killing it with their with a lot of their LCG properties, and especially the ones that are cooperative. You know how much I love Arkham Horror, the card game. I will talk your ear off about how wonderful that game is and how everyone should be playing it. But I won't, because that, you know, that's not what we're talking about here. But I know, John, you've played Marvel Champions. You can probably speak a little bit more to it, but from what I've understood, it's it's right up there. Like, people have been loving it. It hits a good cross section of people where perhaps a younger or less experienced gamer should be able to pick it up and enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
But for those who have a little bit more of the hobby in them, there's still plenty of meat on the bones. And turn it over to you.
Marvel Champions has both like pre-constructed entry decks that you can play for your beginner player, like you're talking about. But you're also able to customize the decks. Because each hero, obviously your Marvel superheroes, mm-hmm. each hero has their own basic deck of cards that you can play through. And then there's different attributes that you can add to them, like leadership or strength, or various things that adjust how the deck will play for what you want to do. And then you have your villain that you're fighting against.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just... The mechanics themselves are really simple as the game plays around. So once you get your cards together, it flows pretty quickly.
Sure. And there's already been a couple of expansion decks. I think like Captain America is available now. You can purchase the expansion there and get his cards. And I can't remember what other villains. I think they had a new villain or two.
Green Goblin, I believe, is the villain that came out. And then another superhero that I don't remember.
Captain Marvel, Miss Marvel, Captain America, Green Goblin.
Yeah.
And one of those was like a scenario pack or something.
Yeah, the Green Goblin scenario pack.
So, and it's unlike Arkham, this isn't like a storyline, right? This is a combat game, basically.
Yeah.
Not that Arkham doesn't have combat, but
No, but it's a self-contained. Yep. You sit down, you play against this villain. It's not something that continues across multiple games.
You lose, whatever,
So far, who knows what they're going to
right.
do.
Right, I mean, the design space is wide open, and, I wouldn't be surprised if they came up with a campaign pack or something down the line.
So one of the really cool things about FFG is how they have, you don't roll a d20 just to resolve whatever is going to happen. Or, so in Arkham, you draw from this bag, and in the bag there are different tokens that alter depending on the scenario and whatnot. Like, what is the mechanic for champions?
Your hero, actually your hero can either be in their hero form or their alter ego form, and that will vary how the villain fights against them. If they're in their alter ego form, which is their normal everyday form, the villain will just add to their scheme that they're trying to accomplish.
Sure, because they don't know.
Yeah, when you're in the superhero form, then they'll attack the superhero, and then each superhero or like ally that you can have has an attack value, and they also have a block value, so you can choose. It's just straight up damage.
Is it just comparing attack versus block?
If you choose the block, you can either take all the damage. You could block some of it if a character has a block, and it's all really simple to calculate. And there's not really anything that random to do to it. The villain does have a villain deck that will determine what exactly he does, if he does extra damage or adds more stuff to his scheme to work towards completing that.
Sure. So yeah, and I suppose we should backtrack just a little bit. If you're not familiar with the concept of a living card game, as Fantasy Flight has called it, it's basically taking the concept of like a collectible card game like Magic the Gathering, where there are random packs of cards. You buy this, you open it, you have no idea what's going to be inside other than there's going to be some common and uncommon rares. Does away with all that, and basically they put out packs of cards that are all, if you buy this pack of cards, you have all the cards from that particular pack. Everybody who buys that pack gets the same cards. So it's still kind of one of those lifestyle games where if you enjoy it and want to get more out of it, you'll be consistently buying more and more cards. But you know exactly what you're going to get. And so if Captain America doesn't interest you, you could probably bypass that pack and still be okay, be able to play the game and enjoy it. So it's a fantastic system, and it's worked really well in a number of ways. And I love the idea, because I love co-op games. You know, I've said that a billion times probably on this podcast or anywhere else. I just shout it randomly when I'm walking down the street. But when I found out that Fantasy Flight made cooperative LCGs, it's like, that's really cool. How does it work? And then you see it work, and it's a lot of fun. And I'm sure Marvel Champions is no different. Mm-hmm.
One of the things I'm sort of fascinated with is, well, first of all, a couple of years back, Arbonac tried to bring back the Versus system. Hmm. And they did bring back the Versus system, but in their initial announcement of doing so, they called it a living card game and immediately got nailed. They left it. No. But my question is, and I don't know if anybody here knows this, but, like, you know, HeroClix has a Marvel license, and Upper Deck has a Marvel license, and Fantasy Flight. So this is not an exclusive license anymore, where it's, you know,
right
at one place or something like that. You know, is that? Does anybody know anything about that licensing?
Not especially.
Well, the one when they were miniatures, but then they did a card game. I just assumed it was like, hey, we're exclusive over here for minis, you know, or something, right? But that's not even true, because there is a new there's a Marvel minis game also, right? Not just Champions. There's, I can't remember the name of the thing, but there's a new miniatures game coming out from FFG.
Sure.
It's a Marvel combat game with miniatures. So I'm blank on the name. So. Yeah.
No, I have no idea exactly how licensing works. I know sometimes they do exclusive, like Fantasy Flight, I believe, has the exclusive license for Star Wars properties.
Sure.
As far as games are concerned, I don't think I've seen anyone else release anything after Wizards lost the role-playing game license there to Fantasy Flight. I don't know if it's got to be different for every property, I suppose.
Yes, yeah. Well, I'm going to grab a comic. You know, I have a surprise book that made my list of favorites for this year. But so last year, at the end of 2018 and early 2019, DC did a deal with Walmart, and they put, you know, these exclusive comics in Walmart. And as a retailer, I was definitely part of people who were pretty upset about the fact that, I mean, it would have been, it's one thing if they were, like, all reprints, but they put original content and made 100-page giants, and so it was, like, 12 pages of news story and then all reprints for $4.99. And we're all like, hey, we could sell those, you know. Mm-hmm. Why are these at Walmart? And on top of that, they put really top-tier talent on there. Well, on the back end, they did reprint all the issues into collections here at the store. So there's 12 issues at Walmart, and then there were 6-issue miniseries here, and there'll be trade paperbacks ultimately. But Tom King and Andy Kubert did a book called Superman. Well, it was a Superman comic. They dubbed it Up in the Sky. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that was the name of the storyline in the thing, but they just renamed it for the miniseries or whatever. And Brian Bendis did a Batman book with Nick Darrington, which was also really good. I liked both of them a lot. But the Superman book, I just want to shout out to. I just thought this book was absolutely fantastic. The premise was a little girl, just a random little girl, gets kidnapped by aliens in the first issue. That's it. That's the premise, right? Well, Superman investigates a little bit, and he finds out that she was taken into space and then taken off somewhere into the galaxy. Doesn't know where. And the point is, does Superman go after her or not? Because Superman, if he's not going to rescue a little girl kidnapped by aliens, you know, what is the point? However, if he goes off and does that, he's leaving everyone else on Earth undefended, right? And so, of course, he goes, and then that's what the whole story is about. And it unleashed Superman to take on cosmic-level threats, always in pursuit of this girl. And there's just moments in the book that are just stunningly powerful of, there's a little girl waiting for me. You know, things like that. And he will not let anything stop him in his quest to try to find her. And I definitely don't want to spoil, you know, the ending of the story. But if you want a story that so uniquely captures the essence of a character. And then I guess there's two books that do that for Superman this year. But this book is just an absolutely spectacular story. When it's trade paperback form, it'll definitely be on my... We keep like a wall of here's our current favorites. Mm-hmm. And it'll definitely be on mine, trying to get people to check it out if they haven't done that, because that book is just fantastic. So... I don't know, that's all I really got. You didn't really read those, right?
I read Batman Universe. That's the
And Batman Universe was fantastic.
I enjoyed it. Fun book.
It's totally different. It's just Batman. It's like, it's not funny, but it's like lighthearted Batman. He has just a crazy sort of cosmic adventure, looking for this egg that Vandal Savage is trying to get, and just one crazy thing gets, you know, he gets sucked to other planets, he teams up with all kinds of people, whether it's Green Arrow or, you know, other superheroes, it doesn't matter, and eventually, you know, gets trapped inside of a White Lantern ring, you know, all these things, and it's funny, and it's engaging, and it's exciting, and the art was great. Nick Darrington's art was fantastic. So that book is just a ton of fun. So... Anyway, those will be really good trades. We have some of the singles for both those books, and I highly recommend them. Board game time?
Sure.
D&D time? Or how many? Because I don't know how many board games you have, so I don't want to like tap you out on board games right away.
We have enough to... I mean, we're already at 6:30, so we're well on our way. We have plenty to fill up the time. But yeah, let's talk about some RPG stuff. John, that's more your wheelhouse there. What was there in 2019? Was there anything in 2019 that really stood out in that regard?
The big one from 2019, for my opinion, just came out was the Eberron campaign setting.
Ah.
Now I can't even... It just came out. Everybody's been looking for... We want other settings. Eberron isn't everybody's first choice, but it's really been the non-Forgotten Realms setting that people have been playing with since it came out in third edition.
Rising from the Last War?
Yes, Rising from the Last War. And it introduced a new class, the Artificer, which a lot of people are really looking forward to, and then all the new races that are in Eberron, the Warforged, are pretty interesting, and then the Changelings.
That was one of my favorites. I had a wicked broken changeling in 3.5. It was great. I've always enjoyed the Eberron setting. I know I don't play a whole lot these days, but I've always really enjoyed the Eberron setting. It was very cool, and had the opportunity to meet Keith Baker, who designed it, and talk with him quite a bit about it a few years ago up at KeyCon in Winnipeg, Canada. And I know at the time he was working on it and, you know, couldn't say a whole lot about it. So that's great that that's out. And I know that'll lead into some 2020 discussion about something happening very soon in the new year regarding Eberron. But,
yes.
And I mean, I'd say, you know, I agree, Eberron's been a huge hit too, but in general, I mean, how long has 5th edition been out? Has it been...
It's been 5 years.
5 years? Yep. I mean, wow. Like, it just doesn't slow down. I mean, I cannot tell you how much of it we sell. And very bluntly, you know, it's even against, you know, like Amazon discounting and so on and so forth. I mean, we still just sell the crap out of it. And we have an extremely active D&D Wednesday night group, despite, you know, I mean, it's maybe a little, you know, 10-15%, not quite as robust as it was a year ago. But, I mean... That's for that to have sustained for minimum 3 years now, right? Mm-hmm. In the way it has, that's really amazing. Because outside of basically Magic organized play, maybe Yu-Gi-Oh, maybe Pokemon, you know what I mean? Like nothing lasts, right? So, yeah, it's interesting how hot D&D is.
Yeah, well, and I'm sure there's going to be. Now that that campaign setting is out there, there's going to be more adventures and books in that setting, in addition to the stuff that they're releasing for, you know, just straight up 5th edition. So that's pretty cool.
They've managed the line well. They still have not oversaturated. There are more products now in the last 2 years than there were for a while, but they're still pretty cautious with And there aren't many misses. I mean, you know, Sword Adventurer's Guide to the Sword Coast, whatever that thing's called, that doesn't sell very well, and like Tomb of Annihilation doesn't sell very well. I mean, like over the over Christmas, we sell just about everything. I mean, robustly restocked, and I'm thinking they might be kind of pushing the limit on starter sets, because I realize we have like four different starter sets now, you know, and they're cool. Every one of them's neat, right, for a different type of fan or whatever. But at the same time, if you just want to introduce somebody to start the game, like that becomes, you know, when the starter situation is becoming daunting to a new player, you gotta be a little cautious, probably.
I'm sure it's just tough to keep those things stocked, because it's like, you know, how can you have all of those on the shelf when is someone really now still wanting the Stranger Things starter set, or are you gonna get the Rick and Morty one? Because there's a Rick and Morty one, right?
And that's the thing, is like, it's another way. How can I get money out of the person who already plays, who's never gonna buy a starter set again? I'll make a Rick and Morty starter set. I mean, I totally get it. I don't have a problem with it. But if they do two more next year, and I'm stocking like six, and someone walks in, it just gets harder and harder to be like, hey, it's easy to start this game.
Doesn't some of that also come down to, it's an easy product for your Walmarts and your Targets to sell once a year? It's like, once a year we're making a new starter box. This is $20, $25. Put this in with your other board games. Sure. And it's new packaging. It's not like you're ordering the same thing 5 years in a row. So, I mean, I'm sure it's Hasbro looking at just getting into Target.
Yeah.
Amazon or, Walmart more often.
It gives them something to...
Because I don't know how many of what is
feature.
In the deep water, whatever. I don't know how many of those books that Walmart's ever going to move through, but a starter set is something.
Yeah, because the Essentials start off as a Target exclusive for a month, 2 months.
Oh, wow.
Brad's been here the whole time, but we haven't heard from him much. Yeah. So,
With invisibility.
Yeah, but let's get back. Let's do another comic, because comics are the longest list. So, since Brad is now ready to chime in, I think it's just appropriate to touch on House of X and Powers of Ten, given that we know Brad is our resident X-Men super fan. So,
yes.
I don't even know if you've had a chance to read them yet.
I've started going through the
The hardcover. Yeah. But I mean, in general, I guess I don't know how much you can talk about it if you're, did you follow it enough to...
Yeah, I kept up with the news. I know the spoilers. I know what their revelations are.
The thing about this book is that, so we on this podcast, we talk about a lot that sense of ownership a fan will have, and how that the more times you reboot something, it's, or the more mediums in, it's harder for fans to unite. You know, and we have all these other big franchises where fans are disintegrating and not uniting. I don't know what the right, But, the thing that House of X and Powers of Ten did that no one does is it justified every fan base ever for the X-Men. It doesn't matter if you read, comics in the 90s, if you were reading single issues when Dark Phoenix came out, if the movies or the animated show, it's all encompassed in that. And instead of like a snap of the fingers or like another start over, it actually brings all fans of X-Men at any point in time together. I think that's the brilliant thing about that book that I just have never seen before. The way they did it. It's just brilliant.
Yeah, and I think the thing that also helps them is they didn't bring on the big name for the 12-issue miniseries. Like, Hickman pitched an idea, can I do this?
Yep.
And then can I stay on a book? Which I think is the way the comic industry's going with the long runs from Snyder and King on Batman. Like, these guys are just like, give me 75 issues, give me 100 issue, let me tell a story, and then let me, if we decide to renew a contract, so be it.
I have two thoughts on that. Do you think they learn from, Saga? Watching Saga just dominate the sales, and then, Snyder, Capullo, Batman, right? Did that change the thinking, do you think, or...?
I think they realize that they're finally at a point where Hickman's name carries just as much weight in the comic industry as the word X-Men. So it's like, you gotta start... Your writers and your artists are not disposable materials. There's something you want to invest in. Bendis generated a lot of goodwill with the Marvel community before he left. Same with Jeff Johns.
And is now at DC as well with a lot of interest. Like picking up, what he's doing at DC is interesting. Where he's picking up like famous characters who have fallen off, who don't have a book and things like that, and trying to Young Justice and Legion and things like that. So
that's kind of what he's doing towards the end of his in his run with his massive Daredevil run.
Right,
most kind of a low B tier list character that he brought a lot of prominence to.
Yeah, the last thing that I mean, my only last real comment about that is that when Hickman did Secret War, you're right. I mean, he built up the Secret War, and then Secret War was this thing where he's like, hey, everybody at Marvel, the old day is dead, the new day is here, do new things. I'm out of here. Drop the mic, right? And you're right. Here it's, I've got a new idea, so we're going to do that first. And then I'm sticking around to see it through. And it's totally backwards. Although he says in podcasts that you have no idea what's coming. Like, it's so gigantic. Now, Darren, you've been doing something that you haven't done in your entire life, which is you read every X-Men comic that comes out. So talk real quickly about what's happened since House and Powers.
Oh, my goodness.
Just in a broad, like, not every book. I mean, what's the idea going on, with the... with the books that are out there,
I mean, at the end of the House and Powers, it was a very positive. I felt it was a very positive ending, and obviously you need some kind of drama and conflict, and there's a lot going on. There's in House and Powers, you've got villains uniting with the heroes. So who are your villains? And there's things coming out, and there's. It's just interesting, like, every book has got its own voice, but it's all connected in a way that I remember Marvel books when I was a kid. There's just, I don't know how to explain it.
No, that's perfect.
And I read, so let's say there's 4 X-Men books come out, and I'll read them all. And I couldn't tell you what happened in which issue. It's all kind of one story in my head.
Because they've become a unified nation.
Yeah.
So it's all like they're...
Yeah.
It's not like, your X-Men were down in Australia when they were having that run for a while.
Yeah, it's all connected.
Yeah, they're all leaving... Their home base is essentially the same whatever square mile he wants to claim Krakoa is.
Yeah.
They're all based off of that. Even if they've got their own adventures, at some point they all are trying to go back to Krakoa because that's where their bed is.
Yeah, it's hands down the biggest thing that happened in comics this year and in probably in many years.
For me personally, I've not read many X-Men books, and when I have, it's always been after the event. This is the first time I've ever read an X-Men event. As it came out.
One thing you touched on, and we'll go over to board games, Mr. Sinister and Apocalypse are on the same team for all intents and purposes as Professor X, Magneto, Jean Grey.
Yeah.
Everybody's... And one of the things that I think about a lot from the last issue is when Professor X was saying, we know what mutant society was when we were all being hunted and feared and divided.
Mm.
What is mutant society if we're all free and have a chance to flourish?
Yeah.
What's our art going to be like? What is our culture going to become? Yeah. Things like that. And it's, I mean... Morrison tried this, Brad. He was, he went to that, like, mutant culture was popular, dressed like mutants, act like mutants, right?
Yep.
This is, like, that idea that started there, like, blown up to a very logical, very crazy conclusion,
Yeah, but not, the other books didn't, completely
acknowledge
go along,
yeah,
completely
doing,
go
yeah.
along with
yep.
him, whereas this one,
yep.
they all, that was Hickman's fix, is like, instead of all of us being in the mansion, we're all on an island.
Yep.
We're all... trying to do.
And we're not fighting apocalypse.
We're trying to
apocalypse
do. Yeah, we're trying to do
us,
what we do, but to benefit our,
which is,
race.
The fact that Apocalypse and Sinister are with them makes it the story so much more interesting. And like, I honestly want to feel like they are on the same side. They're never going to agree on everything, but that makes just the story more interesting because you're going to get a different dynamic than you've had in the past.
And it forces the writers to say, well, before Apocalypse's identity to a bad writer might have just been fighting the X-Men, right? Well, the thing is, if he's not now defined by fighting the X-Men, what is he, right?
Yeah.
And it gives you a chance to work on the character in a way that's never been done before. Yeah. So, board game time.
All right. Well, first of all, Mike Bittner in the chat agrees with you and says, please let Hickman do 100 issues of X-Men.
Like, yeah.
So, So yeah, board games. Another one that we should probably talk about, big in 2019, and we have a number of things that we could talk about with this, but I think we'll kind of keep it. I don't want to say civil because whatever. But the board game Wingspan came out. This is from Stonemaier Games.
Well, we can just talk about whether the game's good. Is all we got, you know?
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's fantastic. It's a really great game. And I'll tell you the premise of it, and you'd probably say, well, that doesn't sound that interesting, but it's very well put together. It's about identifying and watching birds. Right? Like, you tell someone that's the premise of a board game, you're like, that sounds about as interesting as a board game about farming. Which is funny, because there's so many board games about farming for some reason. But essentially, it's a game of set collection and a little bit kind of worker placement in a way. But yeah, it's very much you have these birds and you're trying to get certain types of food that they eat to be able to, you know, purchase the birds, and you play them on your mat based on whether they're birds that live in the grass, on the water, or in like trees, right? And there are some that do both. So, and then based on when you find and identify the bird and get it on your mat, the birds do different things. So some of them have an effect that happens every time you do this action, or some of them, if the bird to the right of them does something, they double it, or, you know, that sort of thing. So the order in which you find them and get them on your board is important, and you've got, of course, secret goals, like you're trying to find a bunch of birds with short wingspans or a bunch of birds of this type, etc. And it just all works together really, really well. It's fun to play. There's lots of good decision making. Maybe that's not fair to say, but any game where you can have a really enjoyable time, you feel like you're accomplishing something even though you might not win, I think is a great game. And I can point to several other games. Dungeon Pets is one of my favorite ones that does that. Like, I will play that game, and I will set goals for myself, and yeah, I'll try to win, but if I don't, who cares? I raised, this Cthulhu pet and managed to properly care for and feed it and everything. And so it's like, it's almost like mini games within the game that you can accomplish. And, you know, like I said, even if you don't win the game, you feel like you've really done something with your time. So yeah, it's worth the hype. Absolutely. And the illustrations are all gorgeous. It's of course a really well produced game. Stonemaier has a good reputation as a publisher for releasing very well constructed games, and so yeah, I definitely would recommend, if you enjoy playing board games, give it a shot if you can.
John, did you play?
I have not actually gotten a chance to play it.
Well, so we got a little under 15 minutes left, and we can talk about infinite things that we liked in 2019, but we're going to do a one-hour podcast, so that's the way it is. Let's talk briefly about Magic the Gathering. We often, when we do these, we separate Magic too much from the other stuff, and I think we're, especially now as a store, really pushing back into Magic as being in the forefront rather than like something that has to, you know, be treated in its own thing. But, you know, it was a hell of a year for Magic the Gathering, and the biggest thing for Paradox is that, you know, Wizards announced a program called the Premium Store Program, and we very famously in my blog, which I think is awesome, you know, did everything we had to do to try to hit Premium. And Premium is just a recognition of, I don't even want to say stores. I think of communities, you know, because, like, that's the thing about Fargo Moorhead is I can go all the way back to 1993, and this community has always outperformed what I would have ever expected out of it. You know, it's been an honor to be part of offering Magic and running Magic. But, I mean, John, you and I, are, like, first and foremost, we're Magic players who just happen to be in that position to be part of the people in the area who bring the game to play. And I mean, I remember the first 10 years all I wanted to do was make top 8 at F&M, you know, like, so I just wanted to play, you know, so I know what it's like and what players want. So, but, you know, I mean, that's just the, that's just what happened here, you know. I mean, there's Arena, you know, talk about Magic Arena a little bit. And,
yeah, Magic Arena really took off this year. It's their new way to play Magic online on a computer. And it's only, well, they're branching out into later, earlier cards and sets now too, but it's always bringing you the latest sets and has a quick, super quick, if you want a draft, you just go on there, you join a draft. It's not the same as a live draft. The computer makes your other picks as you go around a table. So it's not drafting against other people, but then you can play your draft decks, you get to see what packs look like, sealed decks, and then you can play standard on there, and Pioneer.
Historic.
Yeah, historic.
A format that does not exist in real, you know, but yeah. I mean, and people ask us all the time about it, how it's affected the real one. I'd say it's had extremely positive effects mixed with some negative effects. I mean, I think there's no doubt that we watched Booster Draft kind of die and go away as a physical format in Fargo-Moorhead. And I mean, I've got to believe that Arena is the reason for that. But then on the other hand, we had, especially when it first launched, we had customers coming in constantly who had played Magic 10 years ago and hadn't touched it until Arena. Mm-hmm. And they, what did they do? They came in and they wanted Planeswalker decks, and they wanted physical cards, not just Arena. So, I think it's been both, and I hope that we continue to work on more symmetry between the two. I mean, I think a digital game like that's a really good client is really vital. It's 2019. Magic's 26 years old. You know, it needs to fit into the modern world, you know, as much as I can cry and say, I only want you to play it in my store ever, you know, that's that doesn't make any sense, you know?
Yep, they ran Mythic Championships on Arena.
Yep.
So they've got it at all the highest level of competition.
And lastly, like, product quality. I mean, Brad, you follow Magic very closely. The product quality this year has just been fantastic. I mean,
well, I think they finally realized, they've heard enough complaints, there have been enough issues, they finally got to, you know, they up their game if they want to be number one. You know, I think they feels like they're listening to the community a little bit. This was the year that they got rid of MSRP for the American market, which once you heard that and then 6 months later realized that collector boosters were probably the reason that was done.
Modern Horizons, I'd say, too. You know, stuff like that where they changed the packaging of the box and with a kind of a new price level we'd never seen and stuff like that. So, but yeah, no, totally agree.
Yeah, their quality's upped and, you know, they listened to they've been trying to get the modern cards out there. They realized, like, we're having difficulty, like, land bases for everything that's not standard is where all of your money's going.
Yeah.
So what do? They create Pioneer, and they're just like, yeah, those search cards were, you know, the search
fetch lands.
Yeah, fetch lands. They're like, well, no. And then they're like, we're going to aggressively ban because we're going to try and create this as a format you want to play, but we have no idea what it looks like. So, you know, it's kind of go do our play testing for us.
Darren, we're going to jump over to you for a comic again, but we're going to be starting to run down. So why don't you spend a second while I finish this, just thinking about something that was real personal to you. Like, what was your favorite book for the year? I know you got a lot of notes, but just, you know.
I'll go on.
Okay. So, you know, the last thing is the quality of Throne of Eldraine really is, I mean, the game has been very high quality, but what they did with the set, with the art cards, you know, and the showcase cards, it's just fascinating where there's sort of chase cards at every level, and then the all foil packs with the collector's boosters. I mean, the diversity of ways you could collect cool cards and get cool things in Throne was really taking their game to another level.
Yeah, I'm sure they realized that, you know, once someone had bought their single booster box and traded for the few cards they needed, there was nothing left to go. But if you're going to create these alternate art and foil and borderless cards, I also feel this is their response to helping out Commander players, because they know, it's like, we can't give you premium cards all the time in every set, but these fancy-looking cards in foil are going to be what Commander players are searching for. So it's another way to keep Commander players who do not care about any kind of, you know, constructed format from any form, you know, any region. Now there's these new cards all the time. They'll be searching out just, you know, fill in a pretty spot in their deck.
Yep. All right. And I'm sure we'll talk about some Magic in 2020, because there's some cool things coming up, especially for Commander.
Yes.
All right, Darren. There's so many good comics this year. It really was kind of a golden age of books compared to ever.
Yeah.
You know, there may not have been an actual just Alan Moore Watchmen happening. You know, it's not any, but the breadth and depth of the quality. You know, you get, and we're doing this positive show, but 20, there's all kinds of arguments you can make about overproduction at mm-hmm. companies like Marvel and things like that. Yeah. But I mean, regardless of that, just the sheer quality has been amazing.
And yeah, when the quality is high, and it's high for a lot of books, mm-hmm. it's very high and very good. And it's great to see. The one last book I wanted to talk about was Doomsday Clock issue 12. Doomsday Clock has been, you know, as most people know, has been delayed. It took 2 years rather than a year. But 12 finally came out. I stopped reading about issue 4 or 5 because I just couldn't keep, you know, with the delays, I couldn't keep up. So I read everything 1 to 11 the weekend before it came out, so it was fresh in my head. Enjoyed that. Then read 12 when we got it. There was just something about that book, that issue specifically, but all the whole story, but that issue, that just, I don't know, it just kind of, emotionally, it got hold of me in a way that comics can do when they're done really well. And the fact that it was like a DC book, you know, speaks highly of like Geoff Johns and Gary Frank. Towards the end, I mean, we've got, do I say spoilers?
Yeah, you can.
Okay.
You can.
Spoilers. Mm-hmm. There's basically, you know, it's a conflict. What has been building is a conflict between Dr. Manhattan and Superman, which I hoped would not be a fight because it just wouldn't have been right. But it's always, you know, you're thinking it's going to be a fight, but it's not. It's just a conversation. And it's a wonderful conversation. It's a conversation full of hope. It's a conversation that kind of just lifted my spirits. And what it leads Dr. Manhattan, who is a very cold character in terms of how he thinks, how he reacts to things. It brings a spark of emotion and it changes him. And he brings... You know, he returns to the world of Watchmen, which is basically, as it's the story in the early issues, was there was a nuclear holocaust, a nuclear war, and he removes all the weapons. He meets a child that's connected to the original Watchmen story, and because of Superman's goodness and what Superman does, he gives this child his powers. And he gives his powers to the world and kind of just disappears. And there's, like I said to Rich, there's a few panels towards the end where he's walking and you can just see his feet and there's roses. And there's three panels, I think. And there's the first one where you see his feet. There's the one where it's half there, disappearing. And then the final panel, they're gone. And there's just something beautiful about that sequence. When I think of that book, I think of those three panels. And it's really, it's just something beautiful about that. And I get very emotional just thinking about it. So there's a lot going on in that book. There's a lot of about Marvel's history, I'm sorry, DC's history, DC's future, all these continuities and all these multiverses. It's, you know, it's a wonderful story, but that key element about becoming a better person, about giving something to the world, is just something that really touched me, and that's why it's one of my favorite issues of the year.
I want about 30 seconds to tap off of that, and then you guys wrap up with a board game. Same thing if you have a personal board game, right, to conclude with. But, Darren said everything to be said. There's really nothing it's pointless to tack onto it. So, yeah, let's wrap with a board game.
So I'm going to cheat a little bit for me and not go with the board game itself, but with a board game related event. This year's Extra Life for me was such a phenomenal experience. It really tied together a lot of things that we've been building towards doing with the stream, getting exclusive content. Even though there was an attack on their website and it messed things up and got me stressed out right away in the morning, it was amazing. We had our custom design scenario from our good friend Marcel, and that alone generated a couple hundred bucks easily from people watching and donating to try and thwart us, make it a little harder for us, us trying to backpedal and make things a little easier. That one on its own was so much fun. And going into Extra Life, I know there was a lot of fatigue going around, but it turned out to be one of the best years. For me, just, going into that and having that experience in 2019 was great, and I'm super excited to figure out more stuff for 2020, things that we can do, and I've already got some ideas, I'm going to say for me, as far as a personal thing, board game related, that was it. That was such a great experience this year.
We have about 2 minutes. Brad or John, do you have a favorite comic of 2019? Favorite thing you read?
Oh, dear God.
What's okay if no?
No, I mean, well, there's nothing that, like, I'm at that point where I don't know what year things come out anymore.
Yeah.
I'm reading
everything. We talked about that before the show,
in trade, so it's like I'm at a point where it's like, did this happen this year? Or have I just gotten to it so late that it's old? The only thing I'll say is Marvel Champions from Asmodee America or FMG. What do we call them? I don't know. Disney will end
we
up.
We remember
buying.
When we talked about that at the beginning of the episode.
Now that you got your voice back. Fresh in my mind. Just every time that someone tries something new with their property and it feels like this one's going to work.
John, do you have a favorite long-term 2019 thing?
Hey, I know I'm working by Magic, D&D, and stuff. But I started reading my first comic ever.
Oh yeah!
Ooh. Oh,
the Chronicles of Vox Machina Origins, Volume 2. So
it's,
I will say
it's kind of a cheat way in.
It's definitely a cheat way in.
Okay,
all right.
But I just enjoy we revamped Board Game Night / Game Day, and what we're bringing in with that.
Yeah, that was a big thing.
That's true. Yeah, no, good call. Like the massive changes to game day and all the things that we accomplished with that and all the people who helped us. So mm-hmm. We want to wrap this up. Josh, you want to close this out? And sure, I mean, there's infinite more things. I think what we've learned here in this hour is that it was actually a pretty exciting year in 2019. There was actually a lot going on. We've sat here some years and we kind of scratched our heads a little bit trying to get, you know, enough things that we liked, right?
So. Yeah, or just to try and pick out things that stood out amongst the others. It's not that, you know, there was nothing good happened. It's just there weren't as many standouts. And I think this year there were a couple of really good ones that we were able to point to here, which is great. Mm-hmm. Jeremy Hackley on Facebook says Space Bandits was a cool read.
That was a cool read. It was a fun book, and I'm hoping there's going to be more as well. And it ties into another Mark Millar book as well, so... Yeah, I don't want to spoil it, but if you come in, and I'll point you in the direction of the other book, because at the end of Space Bandits, if you've read it, there's another character in there that's from another book, so another Mark Millar book. So,
and there's books like Gideon Falls and East to West. I mean, there's so many comics that we didn't even.
Oblivion Song is still a good read.
Yep.
Yeah.
But such is the nature of things, and we hope that you guys had great experiences in 2019 as well. We'd love to hear more about it. If you want to find us on Facebook, Paradox Comics and Cards, at Paradox CNC on Twitter, Paradox CNC on Instagram, and of course, ParadoxCNC.com, our newly revamped website, which was a big thing in 2019, where you can find all sorts of great content, blogs, various events and things up there with our new calendar and such. We hope that you'll visit us online. We hope that you will visit us in person at 26 Robert Street, where we've been forever.
Oh, yeah. That's another thing. 26 years of 26 Robert Street was celebrated this year.
Yep.
So. All right. Thanks, everybody. And if you're watching live, we're going to take just a quick break and reset for the next one. Otherwise, we'll hear you. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. See ya.
This was a Doxcast. Hope you think it rocks, cast. Oh, look at the clocks, cast. Until next time, geek on.